All right. Ready for the clap?
Yep.
All right. One, two, three. Michigan just jumped off sides.
Yep.
Ba-dunk-sh!
Hey.
Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.8, Omelette du Fromage, Croissant. So, you know, the thing that really gets me, the thing that just really, really bothers me, is that my son is into, like, the sixth best Octonaut tops.
I mean, like, he's not into the Chief or the Penguin who, like, fixes everybody's stuff,
no.
Like, really quickly?
No, do you know, Ace has no frame of reference for this conversation. No,
none.
He's watched a million tons of Octonauts, and the one that he's glommed onto is Tunip,
oh.
The vegetable. Literally half animal, half vegetable, runs around saying things like, Tunip.
Wait a minute, I was under the impression that there are multiple Tunips. Like, it's not just like one of them, there's like a whole like race that they've enslaved, and...
That's a dark turn.
They didn't enslave them, but they found them like growing like in eggs on the side of the octopod and decided Tunip is like the chief vegetable. There are other vegetables. This is a portmanteau of vegetable and animal, Ace. And so there's like he's like the main one. And they cook. They make fish biscuits, and sometimes they like have this weird song that fixes things. It's a little strange. But like at least he's not into the girl who does nothing except take pictures. Like that's her personality, that's her character. It's like, I have a camera. And at least he's not into like the octopus who doesn't do it. He's like the doctor.
Right, the one
the professor.
Like they call upstairs and he like reads something out of a book.
Right, yeah, and like he doesn't do anything cool. Like he's not a pirate cat or a
I feel like this show kind of discovered who its favorite characters were really early and just kind of leaned into them. And like then they had like these extra characters that just kind of appear once in a while. Like there's no storyline for the rabbit.
Well, they got so many Gups. Gups are like mobile underwater rescue vehicles, Ace. They have so many Gups that they're running out of letters. It's going to be like the hurricane signal season where they have to explain the Greek alphabet to children to say why this is Gup Beta, why this is Gup Theta, because like the rabbit is out of control. She's making all kinds of cool stuff, and I'm like, yeah, you want to be an engineer, little buddy? And he's like, Tunip, I'm a vegetable. So that was the worst thing that happened to me this weekend. How about you guys?
My blower broke.
Well, I had to actually finish watching the game, so...
Wait, what?
Well, I mean, you know, to write the recap, you have to at least wait until the final score comes in.
I watched the game. I did not.
Nope. I got to a point where...
This is part of your...
I figured that I'll have an opportunity to rewatch. I mean, I've seen it since now. But I figured, look, it's 70 degrees out. My kids are outside
like
playing in the pile
it.
Of leaves that I'd made in the morning. And I was like, I can be out there and not miserable. Or I could be inside and miserable, which I have all winter to be doing. So I went outside.
Yeah, I mean, miserable
but when you
now.
Have the collective misery experience, then I feel like that somewhat lightens the mood of the misery a little bit.
The strangest thing is when I tweet stuff and people are still mad. In my mentions, like, you know, 3 years ago, it's like, all right, that's fair. I don't agree with you, but I understand where you're coming from. And, like, right now, it's just like, how can you still be, like, emotionally invested in the outcome of a football game? That sounds like a bad thing for a Michigan blogger to say, but it is also, like, the right thing. Like, it's just, Like, the game column is going to be about Michael Weinreb. Do you know? Do you remember Michael Weinreb?
I do.
So for a period of about 2 years, this guy had an incredible run where, like, every 3 months, some different publication hired him to write the same article about Michigan. And it was accurate, but it was annoying. And one of his takes was, like, Michigan shouldn't hire Jim Harbaugh because where do they go after Jim Harbaugh fails? And I was like, that's a stupid take. But now, here we are.
God, that is brutal.
Yeah, well, that's what I got. That's where we are. So
sending Jane Ghost into Eric Bieniemy's closet. That's where I'm at.
Oh,
I mean, it worked with Jim Harbaugh. I mean, you know.
I don't. Why Jane?
Moonshots only. I mean, she's got a New York Times podcast now. She's got some clout. And she's experienced in, you know, waiting in Michigan coaching candidates' walk-in closets and searches.
This is a meme I'm unfamiliar with, Jane in a closet.
Oh, she was tweeting about this the entire, like, 2014 coaching search.
Oh.
Was that she had planned it. She actually wrote an entire thing for Every Day Should Be Saturday about how she had moved into Jim Harbaugh's walk-in closet and, you know, was just hanging out.
God, we were so young.
Going to come to Michigan.
We were so young and hopeful.
I was, yeah, I still remember when I found out.
I still all had all my hair.
I remember...
Oh, let's not talk about hairlines and how they changed.
I had to write up about Ashley's this week, which last week for like the Ann Arbor Institutions thing. And I was like, well, there's one moment that sticks out above many, 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 many Ashley's moments. And it was right after the Harbaugh hire, and we all clinked our glasses, and we couldn't stop. We couldn't even, like, if there was a lull in the conversation, we just clink our glasses and say Harbaugh. And there were times when it was working out. There were times when you could see it.
People would just wander into Ashley's, see us in the corner, and, like, point at us and go, yeah! It was
the high point of the Harbaugh tenure.
No, there was the one.
There was, like, the 2016 MSU game.
Yeah, there's a couple of things, but... Ew.
The Revenge Tour was great, too.
Well, up until it wasn't. So, I mean, last week I thought, this is just going to keep happening because the team has been good enough, and we're kind of passing on the idea that we're going to be an A-level program, but we're going to be a B-level program because the ghost of Frank Solich will descend on any team that fires a coach who's probably still top 15 in Power 5, but...
Even worse, a living Bo Pelini.
Yeah. And now, like, so, one, Michigan State goes out to Iowa and loses 49-7.
Got spanked.
They gave up 49 points
to Iowa.
Iowa.
At least our scouting is good. Other than self-scouting?
We weren't wrong about Michigan State is a sort of comforting
thing. Yeah, all those Michigan
right
State
now
fans who were like, you know, Michigan State's a great program. He's going to turn it around immediately. And this we're going, you know, Heisman campaign. Like, we got everything here.
We were all right that Michigan State was going to suck. We called that Minnesota was maybe a lot overrated. That's true.
We thought a bunch of games were going to get canceled, so that was a good prediction.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's good that we're not, like, totally, like, at least we're not terrible at what we do.
How mad is Minnesota that, like,
so
everybody else just knows that they could throw down the sideline, and, like, they hadn't quite scouted Vincent Gray yet?
Well,
yeah, tough break for them not having game tape yet.
Well, so I guess this is not the section of the podcast where we're actually talking about the offense. We're talking more holistically about when and how and why Michigan should move on from various persons. Because
but first, we should talk about our sponsors, maybe?
Yeah, sure. They'd love to be associated with this conversation. Why don't we go right ahead,
Seth? We're bearing them 10 minutes into the podcast. But we are presented by Underground Printing and the Bose Store. And alphabetically, our associate sponsors are Ann Arbor Elder Law, Fuego Box, Homeshore Lending, Human Element, Information Entropy, Michigan Law Grad, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, the Residency in Ann Arbor Downtown, and the University of Michigan Alumni Association.
All right. So, I think the prospect of Michigan going 2-6, maybe 3-5, kind of changes equations in terms of, like, is this tenable? Especially because, one, Harbaugh doesn't have a contract extension, and two, the athletic department is under a lot of financial pressure. So, three, if you're looking at season ticket cancellations and a lot of pessimism next year when you can actually fill a stadium, hopefully, then I think it's now fairly possible that we're looking at a new head coach next year.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that after just... I mean, I have not felt this detached since 2014. I don't think it's close. We all know what happened in 2004. You know, that it's a, and what we forget about 2014 is until they had a series of disasters that just could not possibly be ignored, there was a chance that there was going to be another year of that.
Yeah. And despite the fact that there was that Maryland game, which had an attendance of, quote, 100,000, which was probably closer to 70, maybe 60.
Yeah.
And, you know, another 6 years down the road without a single Ohio State win, the whole fan base gets more ornery, more likely to pull the ripcord. Like,
and you've got to think about with COVID, like, now that people have, like, experienced a season not in the stadium, you have to wonder, like, you got to give them an incentive to come back.
Yeah, a lot of sports fandom is habit, and now those habits have changed, so... I don't know.
I mean, long term, I think you're right.
Go ahead.
Short term, if it's safe to go back in the stadium next year, people are going to pour in. And we have historical data from like 1918, like 1919 season.
People still act
the same way, and we have some examples from European history too when they had like disasters and stuff.
Television.
Fine. True. And I think it's going to affect, I think it's more of a long-term issue, but I think next year people are going to flock back.
Do they even have couches?
Well, I think Seth's probably right in that sort of I can go do a thing bounce. But is that going to last, like, I mean, there's a very significant countervailing force, which is like, I don't want to see this.
Like it's... Yeah, and like people showed up for the Penn State game at night in 2014, and then, you know, momentum hit a wall not so long after that, and then people stopped coming.
And one thing that I think we should be clear on is that the coronavirus stuff around the pandemic is not an excuse for Jim Harbaugh. This is year 6, and his defense just jumped offsides 5 times in a first half. A week after jumping offsides twice. So they had a week to work on it, and they decided they wouldn't do that. Or if they did decide to work on it, it didn't work at all. And this is simple. We're going to clap, and Michigan's going to jump offsides over and over and over again. Like, that's not about the weirdness surrounding college football. It's the fact that this program plays undisciplined. They can't ID blocks. They can't play man-to-man coverage. They can't get their linebackers to the right spot, they can't stay on side. And this is year 6. So why would we think this is going to get better?
Well, he hangs his hat on the running game and did not match Rutgers' performance in that regard for the second straight week.
Yeah.
Against a common opponent.
So, I mean, there have been hints of this, just the disorganization in the program, the really bad recruiting class from 2 years ago based on a recruiting coordinator change that didn't go well. You have Bob Shoop enter the program, and then, oops, months later it turns out he didn't enter the program.
Not the first time they've had a weird coaching thing like that.
Yeah, I mean, you have all this coaching turnover. Like, you have Chris Partridge and Campanile leaving for Ole Miss, and it turns out that Chris Partridge isn't the defensive coordinator. DJ fucking Durkin is the defensive coordinator. So That is less than a lateral move. And that's one of your best recruiters. That's a guy...
Under normal circumstances.
Right, yeah, like, you're going to work for Lane Kiffin as a position coach that's the same position coach that you were working for at Michigan. I mean, there's the coaching turnover is so extreme that I think it really hurts the program. You have Ty Wheatley here for 1 year, and then he bails because he just can't work with Harbaugh. So there was a point at which that was okay, and now, because he was relentless, he was driving, his teams had success. And now I just think that at some point coaches decline, except for Bill Snyder, and we're hitting that point with Harbaugh, and this team is so bad that if I was in charge, he'd get the X.
X now or X at the end of the season? I think end of the season is the obvious, firing a guy, right?
I mean, firing a guy in the middle of the season doesn't help anyone do anything, so...
I have a suggestion.
Okay.
Earl Brewsome. It's the only way they've got a chance of winning the Ohio State game. You fire him the week before, and you give him one.
And just happen to leave
chance. Some
white bandanas around the stadium, around the guys.
I mean,
you've seen the quarterbacks and Justin Fields. Now imagine them on the same field.
I'm saying it's their only chance. I'm not saying it's a good chance.
I mean, Ohio State could be laughing so hard that they screw things up.
Yeah, but that's after they get up like 60 points. Like, this defense had NFL corners and still got shredded for 50 and 60 points, and now they do not. So, my plan for the Ohio State game is to watch it on mute and bail as soon as I think I can. I don't know. I don't know what my plan is. Maybe I'll sit in a tub of warm water.
My friend who
let it slowly slip over my face.
My buddy who invited me to Columbus for this.
I'm sorry, I was interrupting. I was interrupting you with my suicidal ideation, which is
No, I just started talking before you got to your suicidal ideation. Then you just kind of powered through.
Yes, that's where we're at.
That's what to step.
That's what we're doing.
He's trying to rescue.
You know,
there.
The bathtubs. K-pop bathtubs. I'm in the black, dripping K-pop bathtub land. That's what's going on. Maybe we should stop this segment and talk more specifically about the things that went disastrously wrong against Indiana.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Get a holiday head start with Underground Printing. Whether it's a new custom swag for the staff or personalized face mask for the team, UGP can meet all of your custom apparel needs. They are locally owned and operated and have thousands of five-star reviews. Check out UGP's holiday gift guide at ugp.io/holiday-gift-guide because custom holiday gifts are a great way to stay connected. My wife loves to make fun of me because so many of my shirts are from UGP. They're not all Michigan. I've had them custom make some. They've been supporting MGO Blog for so long that they've had time to replace my entire wardrobe. Seriously, check them out for this holiday. ugp.io/holiday-gift-guide.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Win or lose this season, stop in to Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. check them out at Information Entropy.
I never see the threat too soon. The blood on the bandage, the ghost in the room. Got a canvas as wide as the moon. But when I see it at night, it's a sickening blue. I was thinking people never change. But there's a new taste of dread that I cannot explain. And the thoughts that make up my life get reflected in others from time to time. Now I've got another question. And if we run out of time, can we make an exception? Got a piece that needs completion. And I want to hear more from you. Here's what I'd like to do. Temptation, I could be a part of you.
Ace? Seth? I need tanks hotter than the average temperature of a Michigan message board this morning!
Go get Urban Meyer!
Is that seriously your hot take?
No.
It's incredibly hot, but you know what? It's time for Michigan to stop pretending like we're good guys and just go full evil. Go get Urban. Go get D'Antonio as your defensive coordinator. Get Giuliani as your AD. Just go full evil. Let's just throw out anything left over from Fritz Kreisler and go back to the Yost era when we are the biggest cheaters, the biggest assholes. Everybody hates us, and we love it.
They already hate us. We might as well cheat.
All right. I can see the argument for like importing like competent people who are bad. But Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Let's try to think of the most evil person that could come up like, in my
head.
Oh,
he wasn't competent either. I was going to say
that. He's not really competent either. You get the point.
Let's pick someone who's like good at being evil.
You import Liberty's athletic department is what you do.
Beat Virginia Tech, everybody.
Yep.
Ace, I need your honest take.
Oh, God, doing the voice today.
The Big Ten should end the regular season and move to a four-team conference playoff.
So I outlined this on Twitter yesterday, actually, because I talked myself into this actually being a good idea.
Okay.
Which is, the Big Ten East is god-awful. We have established that. It's horrifying, and there are two good teams, and they are Ohio State and Indiana. Wisconsin has removed themselves from the Big Ten West race by COVIDing themselves and others, leaving only two good teams in the Big Ten West, which are Northwestern and Purdue.
So you want a four-team playoff with Ohio State, Northwestern, Purdue, and Indiana.
Not just that. I want best of three series for all of these. Because they got to get the games under their belt to make the playoff.
That is an awful lot of Northwestern, Ace.
We got to build a – well, it would otherwise be an awful lot of the rest of the Big Ten.
I'm oscillating between this is the hottest take ever and it's a good idea.
It's the best chance we have to see Ohio State lose this year.
Is it?
Three games against Indiana and then three games against Northwestern?
that's really the argument you want to go with?
They've already beaten Penn State. We're not doing it. They took down Rutgers.
All right. My hot take is Michigan head coach Tom Allen.
Actually threw that around half seriously in a group chat yesterday. So.
He's already got a lot of Michigan flavor on the staff. His offensive coordinator is Nick Sheridan. Mike Hart is his running backs coach.
And associate head coach.
He is, well, all head coaches are associate paths. But he seems like a weird, positive, happy, religious guy instead of a weird, negative guy who nobody can stand to be around for more than 2 seconds. So it could work. Tom Allen, Michigan head coach. guys feeling it?
I'm not against it. I'm open to any and all ideas right now. Well, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them.
If you would like us to continue doing this extremely humiliating and silly segment, get some Fuego Bucks. They'll send you some hot sauces every month, three. They pick them out for flavor, not merely heat. If you go to FuegoBucks.com/MGOblog, you'll get 10 bucks off your first month. All right, we'll start with the offense. Thing number one that went disastrously wrong. Michigan running backs ran for no yards on 75 carries. That's not quite true.
It's spiritually true.
They didn't actually have that many carries because they went away from the run game. So it wasn't 27-4-27, but it weren't a whole lot better.
Nah, Hassan Haskins went 6 for 11.
All right.
Chris Evans went 3 for 3, and Zach Charbonnet went 1 for 4. Oh, and Blake Corum's down there at 2 for 3, because I guess his fun stuff happened on...
What was Haskins' long? Because didn't he have a 9-yard run?
He had a pretty solid run in there.
Well, he had 11 yards total, so...
Oh, I'm sorry. He was 6 for 19 with a long of 11.
I remember the 11-yard run. He had a couple of good ones against Michigan State, too. Like, that guy is a player.
And actually, I take it back about Blake Corum. He was 2 for negative 3.
Yes, because people were in the backfield the whole day because Tom Allen blitzes off the corner a ton. And Michigan, after last week's performance against Michigan State, kind of looked like they were bad at IDing things. That is correct. Also, the run game was not helped by the fact that Josh Gattis, supposedly the guy who does all reads all the time, has his quarterback turning around like it's 1985 and handing the ball to the running back, never running a bootleg, never reading a defensive end, in a spread offense where numbers are paramount. So we had a good quarterback run game against Minnesota, and then did he have a called run in this game?
No.
I don't think so.
No, well, unless he did in the last 8 minutes.
No, but they faked one. They faked a pin and pull and tried to throw it, and he had to reverse field and scramble because it was blown up so badly.
So, I mean, I don't know if Milton isn't able to make these reads, but even if he's not able to make the reads, you need to have the mesh point be part of the offense so it looks like it. And then if he pulls based on no read at all but a pre-snap call, that still makes him play it honest, makes him cover the quarterback. And in this game, they had absolutely no... They had no read game at all.
Yeah.
So
the way to do that, if your quarterback is not making zone reads, then the way to do that is how he did that against Minnesota and how he did that in the spring game a couple years ago, where like you just run the back out of the backfield and use your quarterback as the runner, right? Like they did that with Denard with Rich Rod. Just run the running back out of there.
He did that 2 weeks ago.
Where'd it go?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he doesn't look hurt. He's taking some pretty brutal shots to the ribs and whatnot, and it doesn't seem to affect him because he's essentially Godzilla. So he doesn't seem like he's not mobile. He doesn't seem like he's hurt in any way whatsoever. So why are we ignoring a key component of modern college offenses? Oh. Why did we hire Josh Gattis, who's like 17 years old and like was part of the explosive Penn State and Joe Moorhead offenses and Alabama offenses, and now how is this a Josh Gattis offense? How does this look any different than what Harbaugh was doing when he arrived, except the quarterbacks and the pistol?
Gattis was there, wasn't he? He wasn't, like, at Bob Shoup's house or something?
I saw him on the sideline. Okay. His mask wasn't over his
nose. That's right. There's another piece of disorganized. Michigan, I've watched a lot of Big Ten football now, and I think we probably are the worst. Wisconsin was pretty bad, too, but we only got to see one game from them. But as far as their coaches having their masks on, Harbaugh's is ridiculous. And Brown, I don't think I've ever seen it over his nose.
Oh.
But that goes in the defense section.
So, I mean, other than that, I thought Joe Milton had the kind of game that shows a lot of promise. That's just his third start. Obviously had a couple of issues. The two interceptions, you know, the last one, it's 3rd and 15, you're down a million points. Try to make something happen. No big deal. The first one that was kind of the dagger for Michigan's chances in this game, you know, you look at it and it goes directly to a defensive back, but then the replay from the Skycam shows that wasn't actually a bad decision. It was just a terribly inaccurate throw. So he has the arm to hit that kind of hole in the cover too, and that's what he's going for. But you also see Cornelius Johnson like stop and start coming way back to the ball, and that's why, plus the fact that it's so flat, that's why it was intercepted. The decision there was actually okay, and so far, you know, Milton was able to hit a deep ball in this game, beautiful post route to Johnson. He consistently stood in against pressure and delivered accurate passes. He's able to throw off platform just because his arm is so big he doesn't really need to step into anything. If Joe Milton was the worst thing about Michigan football, they'd be 3-0.
Yeah, I mean, because he also did that. He averaged over 10 yards an attempt, and he did this with linebackers consistently planting themselves in his ribs after he's letting the ball go. I mean, a lot of these are throws that I think a lot of guys who are built like not Superman would not necessarily make, just because they wouldn't be standing in to throw the ball. I mean, he's really kind of got a Ben Roethlisberger thing going in terms of his ability to stand in the pocket and just throw in the face of really heavy pressure, because he knows he's this enormous dude who's going to be able to take a pretty heavy hit and still get some heat on the ball. So I'm excited about him.
He's got a lot to clean up, though, right?
And I'm excited about a lot of the skill guys.
Like, there's so much to... Like, they're... His third down and five, where he, like, threw it in the dirt, like, there was... Ronnie Bell was breaking open on the outside, and, like, that read, you see cover two, you're supposed to go to the smash on the left side, because you have a cornerback who's trapped between Blake Corum and Ronnie Bell, who's 25 yards downfield.
I'm not going to get too concerned getting bogged down in specific plays about a quarterback in start three playing for a disorganized coaching staff that can't get its act together.
Yeah, this is the second straight game he's had 50 throws. They're putting it all on him.
No, I'm not complaining about him.
In the face of a game plan that is, like, totally putting limits on, like, you know, the defenses know what's coming because there are no quarterback keeps. And also, shocker, he will sometimes make the wrong read against cover two. How much does he fucking see it in practice?
Well, there is a scout team, so I'm
yeah, I'm sure they're well coached. Once we get down I was trying to say
that as a he has upside left to go. I mean, like missing Ronnie Bell downfield was just a killer, right? Like there's just a couple plays there that at least keep Michigan in the game, and they're plays that he's made before.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's accurate, but you're putting the whole game on a guy in his third start because your defense sucks and your running game is non-existent. So, of course, he's not going to win the game single-handedly for Michigan because he's not there yet, but he very much looks like he could get there. Mm-hmm. Like, the way the ball comes out of his hand, that looks like an NFL quarterback. That looks like a guy who can throw anywhere on the field. And I know I missed Ronnie Bell, but he didn't miss by much. And the main reason that's frustrating is because he didn't realize how open Bell was and just kind of take a little bit off. We don't know if he can do that. But overall, his accuracy has been way beyond my expectations. And his ability to read defenses that aren't... Like, remember the Minnesota play that Eric Aull dropped?
Mm-hmm.
They haven't done that again. They haven't been able to find him the easy throw for a big ton of yardage. He's thrown into zones with a lot of guys dropping. He's dealing with a lot of pressure. Like, you know, I think alone among Michigan players, except maybe the defensive ends, he's really lived up to the off-season hype.
Yeah, and when you give a guy in his, you know, first few starts, you know, of 40 dropbacks practically, you know, that's 40 chances to screw up, you're going to see a few. But, like, overall, what we see from him is so positive that, yeah, I just it's at least one thing to hold on to from this game that Joe Milton basically accounted for all of Michigan's offense and looked pretty darn good.
So intellectually, this all, a lot of the time. You know, yes, you're right. Feelings ball, and I know this kind of goes back in the last section, but like Michigan misses so many opportunities that are right there. Like Eric Aull had another big drop in this game on third down.
What is
I know it's about Joe Milton. I'm just saying, like, part of the reason that it feels so awful is that, like, there are moments that come in the game that, you know, that you get, right? You have moments of luck like every team does. And Michigan, I don't think they've capitalized on a single one. And I think that's why maybe it feels worse than it actually was.
Okay. The other thing that I think kind of stood out as a positive for the offense is that the wide receiver group does look pretty solid. So Johnson had a good game. And I think Giles Jackson, again, had a couple more tough catches. He got lit up on a crossing route and still held onto the ball. Like, he's...
Same situation as the other one. Just not seeing a cover two flat guy. Just waiting.
Yeah, I mean...
But also just like that's your only option is to fit that ball in there.
So but the thing about Jackson is, like, you wonder if he's just stunt casting, right? You wonder if he's an actual receiver, and it turns out that he is. You know, he's a guy who I think has probably more targets than anyone on the team except maybe Bell. And you know, he's a quality player, and he's a versatile player. And if they ever were able to run the ball for 2 seconds, that thing where he pops out for a wheel route would probably work pretty well. So, you know, I'm fairly encouraged by the fact that the wide receiver group looks solid.
And we only passingly mentioned Bell, but he had a hell of a game.
I think we expected that from Bell to a certain extent, and we didn't really know what we were going to get out of the other guys. And that
we did get a legitimate mossing from Bell in this game, which was something that we had theorized was possible, but, you know, hadn't necessarily seen yet. It was him just going up and plucking a jump ball over a defender. So that was a nice thing to
catch. And yeah, he really got up on that. We had thought that was hypothetically possible, but because of Nico Collins, hadn't actually seen it.
Nick Eubanks downfield.
Yeah, that was a nice throw by Milton if he was actually trying to throw him open, which I think I'm going to give him that benefit of the doubt at this point, because he's been able to...
He's done that a few times.
All right. Anything else?
We touched on the O-line being a mess, but the O-line was also missing both starting tackles.
Oh, yeah, that was a nice surprise.
Bit of foreboding news right before the game starts. Like, hey, you know the team that blitzes from everywhere? Here's your reshuffled offense.
I spent the whole offseason talking about how great it was that Michigan never had to put a true freshman OL on the field again. Game three, baby! It's good for Zach Zinter long term, not good right now.
Yeah, there's quite a few people, because you're talking about the tackles that had to get passed in order for Zinter to be out there, which is concerning for all those guys.
Well, not if Zinter is amazing. He's Adonis of a man. 334 pounds, 6 foot six, and he looks like Dominique Wilkins. I think we're done with this segment.
I think we are too.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGLO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Get a holiday head start with Underground Printing. Whether it's a new custom swag for the staff or personalized face mask for the team, UGP can meet all of your custom apparel needs. They are locally owned and operated and have thousands of 5-star reviews. Check out UGP's holiday gift guide at ugp.io/holiday gift guide, because custom holiday gifts are a great way to stay connected. My wife loves to make fun of me because so many of my shirts are from UGP. They're not all Michigan. I've had them custom make some. They've been supporting MGO Blog for so long that they've had time to replace my entire wardrobe. Seriously, check them out for this holiday. ugp.io/holiday gift guide.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus, with all the amenities you expect.
Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
On the other side of the ball. Can we just do that? Is that it? That's the segment. Roll those ads. All right, fine.
I think you jumped off sides there, Brian.
Oh.
Boo. I mean, appropriate, but boo. It wasn't just that they jumped off sides so much, it's that they also almost jumped off sides on, like, every single other freaking play.
I know, every time
play.
They clapped, it was like, ooh, it's train spotting, and they have heroin.
It was like a Pavlovian response.
I don't understand, like
Penix might as well have been ringing a goddamn
these
bell.
These are, like, offenses that regularly clap and look to the sideline. You know, this happened last week. It happened the week before.
This isn't new either. This isn't like some new development.
But what was it about those specific claps? What was it about those specific claps that was different from the other claps? Was it the tone? Was it just the assertiveness of that particular? I don't understand.
The specific Echo Memorial Stadium. The acoustics are
Tom
incredible.
Allen put some sort of deep sleeper in the program and had them hypnotize Michigan defensive linemen so that when they heard the specific resonance frequency from an empty Memorial Stadium, big advantage for being in Indiana, you don't need to predict a pandemic for that they would jump off sides.
True.
Fact.
No, I really think the Pavlovian response thing has legs.
What the...
Because I've never seen that.
I think
that.
Jeep and Ben tweeted at me during the game, I'm going to have to use that Taylor Twellman gif 75 times this year. What are we doing? What are we doing?
And you know, like, the one play that you won't want to give up?
At least we're
like
also
the one thing, like, if you're Michigan, the last thing that you want on your defense when you got Vincent Gray out there is, like, five free shots downfield.
I hadn't even thought about that. Where the shots are even freer. Oh, God.
He had, like, and he had, like, a, you know, a confidence-boosting pass breakup early in the game, and then immediately the defensive line is just like, you know what, man, fuck you.
That was a nice play. And everybody on the sideline is like, yeah, this is where it turns around. We're going to do it. It was not.
I, like, bolded it in my notes.
Tweeted about it. Everybody was like, all right, come on. We can do this. You can do this. We cannot do it. You cannot do it. So we found out that Michigan's zone coverage is not very good.
I mean, we know why they played so much man
well,
now.
I mean,
mystery solved.
So people are, like, one of the clips that I think John Doerr had was the the third and long conversion, which was just a badass throw from Penix between three guys. Like, at least that looked hard. Mm-hmm. You know?
It's true.
Know, we can give up 600 passing yards, but at least some of them looked hard. Others did not.
So Sherrick and I were DMing throughout the game, and he, like, you know, he used to teach defensive backs. So he, like, gets into the technique and stuff. And
we have an opening. Does he want to?
You know, we have plenty of guys who are good at that in the Michigan family. Like, finding a defensive backs coach or assistant should not be that difficult. Anyway, he says there's a technique issue where, like, they are... they're, like, panicking and kind of going up without, you know, it's not always looking for the ball, right? You just have to kind of watch what the receiver's doing with his hands and kind of go up with his hands. And instead of that, they're just kind of flailing around.
This is the technique that I called Shoryuken when I dubbed it 9 years ago after the Notre Dame game. So it is the humility approach for defensive backs.
Right.
Where you're not going to get your head around. You're going to focus on the receiver, and when he puts his hands up, you go punch the wide receiver in the face. Almost literally. Because it's hard to, like, concentrate when that happens. You know, it's like a bear. You punch it in the nose. And then they drop the ball. And then...
Brown bear.
Technically, you punch their hands through their face.
wait.
The technique.
Wait. Ace is specifically saying that, like, all right, let's go punch some brown bears in the nose. But grizzlies, like, both of those kind of seem like bad situations.
No, I know that there's, like, come on, man. You've lived in Michigan and Colorado. You should know this. Like, there are two distinct approaches to bears with the smaller brown bears and black bears. You try to scare them, and you might have to actually fight them with the idea that if you sock them in the nose, they'll be surprised and run away. If you do that to a grizzly bear, they're going to maul you and eat you. So you play dead.
I didn't know that because I haven't spent a lot of time, like, around bears.
I think I learned that from Patrick's Twitter.
Yeah, my summer camp growing up, we hiked in the Upper Peninsula, so you had to learn how to deal with smaller bears. So we went with the make yourself big and yell and
I was more of a them. Spend your summer reading science fiction kind of. Person. Surprise.
Speaking of punches in the face, going back to the offense, Indiana had a guy who punched two punches in the face, followed by taking his hands and hitting him, which is a, you know, as an older brother, I appreciate the why are you hitting yourself
maneuver. I was confused about that because that was like Michigan's first down. It was like the snap after that. Like, how could Ronnie Bell have pissed you off that much after 2-3 and outs and one first down? Like, what did he say? Did he say...
He is an obnoxiously good blocker.
That's probably...
That's what it was.
There's a fair possibility that was it. But I was just like, this is way too early for someone to be throwing punches. Like, has Ronnie Bell gotten 100 yards on you? Did he dunk on you? Did he talk trash about all kinds of stuff? Because, no, he caught one ball, and you're like, this is unacceptable.
Dude's water got hot a little quickly in this game. Especially considering how it ended up playing out. Really could have played it a lot more chill. That was the other thing. Also, Indiana having one of their, like, two really good corners kicked out of this game, and Michigan took one shot.
That was
worked,
a safety.
And then the rest of the time, it was like, we're not
going
to
that was a safety. Who was, like, who's a really good safety, and, like, then their backup's terrible.
So, I think the worst thing is when Dax Hill does something cool, because he's the promised one. Mm-hmm. Who can line up on a slot receiver and wipe out a slot fade and also cover a crossing route. So there's like a 3rd and 6 where there's a crossing route and it's man coverage and you're like, well, crap, that's a conversion. And Dax Hill gets it down short of the line.
Nope. Tackles
he did that. He's done that consistently the past 2 weeks. He's a two-way slot defender. He's amazing. Michigan needs to have him there because that's a really important part of the defense. And he's being utterly wasted. So that's...
Yeah, his instinct to flip to Alabama. I'm not saying he should have gone with it, but... yeah. Maybe should have gone with it. I had that same feeling during the game of, like... Because they weren't targeting that much because, you know, there were other targets to target. But when they did, he was so good. And he, you know, and shutting down Watt Fillier is not easy. And it just made me sad. It was just like, oh man, I'm sorry, Dax. I'm sorry we let you down.
We did this with Peppers too, remember?
I'm sure.
No, the like, Peppers was on like good defenses that had a, like Michigan almost
his
won.
His true sophomore year, it was 2014.
Was on the 2016 defense. Oh, he came out the other side.
I mean, there was a promise that something good would happen.
Yeah, like sorry, just he was a true freshman in 2014. God, he signed on for the 2014 team.
I was about to say.
Michigan fandom does weird things to your brain.
I mean, thank goodness he didn't sign on for the 2015 team, or he wouldn't have come.
Other defense things?
I mean, like, another frustrating thing, because that's all we got, is that the defensive line was getting a decent
amount of
pressure.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just, and including from, like, you know, like I thought Taylor Upshaw flashed pretty nicely. He was credited with two quarterback hurries, and the statisticians are usually pretty reticent to hand those out. Ojabo got in there a couple times. Like Juice got in there on a couple stunts. Julius Welsh.
No, it's okay.
Sorry,
Juice. You can call him Juice. It still works.
I'm just getting that because I know that is not like a universally known nickname, so I should probably just use his actual name before
just, call
just
him MJ,
calling him Juice.
And people will be like, who is that, Michael Jackson or Michael Jordan? And I'll know Julius Welshoff. We call him MJ.
we got an MJ graphic in this game.
We did.
In a telecast. An MJ Reagan graphic. Good times.
Gabe Newberg was in on a couple plays, too. Like, he actually looked viable.
Well, there you go.
So the defensive line, if you know anything good can ever happen in the secondary, other than
well,
the
I think
XL.
Aiden Hutchinson is probably done.
Dunzo, sitting on the side.
He looked disinterested.
He wasn't disinterested.
No, I mean, it's an unfortunate moment where you're looking down at your phone while wearing a mask in the tunnel in sweats, and it's just always going to look one way, especially given how the game was going, and that you can't possibly...
He's probably shit-posting like my mentions with his burner.
He was taking it really hard, let's say that. Like, there was a reason he had to go and sit with his parents. He was taking it pretty bad.
Yes.
Yeah, it sucks to get hurt when you're...
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he's probably done for the year, just based on all the stuff surrounding all the images we got of him. It just doesn't, or like best case, like high ankle sprain, and there's not really a whole lot of season. So,
yeah. And do you want to risk playing on that when you're a legit NFL guy who's already put some?
Yeah, I mean, this year. I don't know if that might affect the decision to come back because. He looks like an NFL prospect. He looks like a first rounder easy, but like did he put enough stuff on tape against high quality opposition? No.
I think that just might be a problem for so many guys in this NFL draft that like that's not gonna be as much of an issue as it would be in other years.
Look at us talking about the future like it matters.
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be some other things that might be obstacles to Hutchinson wanting to come back to Michigan.
You know,
next year.
We get down because like we're so down. Change. But you know, I know a couple of the parents of players.
Oh, I'm what?
You're the only one who's still down here, buddy.
Yeah, dude. We have moved on. Rip off the Band-Aid.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks. And you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games.
Well,
and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGO blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
$110,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Welcome in, Jamie Macko, JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well. I'm just counting down to the Michael Penix Jr., Peyton Ramsey grudge match Big Ten Championship game.
Oof. I wouldn't get ahead of yourself.
No, I'm not. I think one of those teams is a strong bet, maybe, to get there, but...
Of course, Jamie is a hybrid Michigan/Indiana fan, so he was probably the happiest of all of us this weekend. What's it like to be rooting for a top 10 Indiana team?
It's amazing, to be quite honest with you. I never really knew how I would feel once Indiana finally beat Michigan in football, but I was pretty happy about it because it looks like they could have, you know, something of a magical season, and it combines with kind of maybe a down year for Michigan. So it's kind of perfect timing for something like that. But I mean, for years, you know, you're cheering for a 2-10, 3-9 football team. So to have them be ranked in the top 10 is kind of fun. And I heard from so many people that I went to college with yesterday. It was kind of crazy.
Well, at least you're going to be prepared for the other half of that season.
Yes.
We're going to start out as we usually do between a battle of 1-2 teams. Iowa 49, Michigan State 7, obviously of some import for Michigan season since they just lost to this very terrible Michigan State team. Not as lopsided in terms of yardage as you might think. 405 for Iowa, 286 for Michigan State.
Still kind of lopsided.
Still, but like 49-7 lopsided, probably not. Sure. But Rocky Lombardi throws three picks, and that's what happens when Rocky Lombardi is throwing at people who are sort of close to receivers.
Yeah. On one of his interceptions, he tried to throw the ball so hard that he fell down.
We lost to that team. We lost to that team. Yeah. We lost to that team.
Got worked by him.
Right. Iowa had plays of 28, 27, 18, 14, and 13 yards on their first two drives. Paved the way for two easy touchdowns, a quick 14-0 lead, and somehow the game managed to get worse for Michigan State from there. I mentioned the one Lombardi pick. He threw three in the first half alone. And after Iowa added another touchdown to make it 21-0, there was that crazy end-of-half sequence where, with 2 minutes to go, Iowa returned a punt for a touchdown. And then on the ensuing Michigan State drive, Lombardi threw a pick six. So then, boom, boom, it's 35-0, and it was pretty much a controlled scrimmage after that for Iowa.
Well, and then immediately after that, in the third quarter, there's a sack strip touchdown. So Lombardi has four turnovers in this game, yeah. Two of which are defensive touchdowns, and that's how you get 49-7 without a particularly large yardage gap.
Yeah.
Hey, I got some trivia for you, Jamie. Okay. Ricky White had one catch in this game. How many times was he targeted?
Ricky White was probably targeted one time.
Eight times.
Eight times. One for
he's
eight.
He's not good.
No.
At least the scouting was.
Wow.
Jamie has the same guess that I did off air, yeah. And that was just the most depressing answer to hear.
I mean, that's, 12.5%? That's got to
yes.
be. I mean, I can't think of anything like that. Like the receiver for Purdue, Bell, had like 21 targets, but like 13 catches. So
yes.
he was off eight times, but that's a little bit different. Wow, that is boy. If the score of this game relative to Michigan State didn't make me depressed enough, that stat did right there.
Well, that's what I'm here for, Jamie. Moving on to the big surprise of the week: Maryland 35, Penn State 19. Penn State is 0-3. How did this happen?
I mean, this actually is considerably more of a surprise than Indiana. Indiana beating Michigan. Indiana at least was pretty well.
Oh, none of us were surprised by Indiana beating
Michigan. Right, exactly. Last year, Penn State beat Maryland 59-0. The cumulative score the last 3 years, 163-6. Maryland had gone 14 straight quarters without scoring a touchdown against Penn State, and they had touchdowns of 62, 42, 38, and 34 yards, all in the first half yesterday. It was, and those aren't even some of the more remarkable stats of this game, but one thing I learned was that a five-star freshman recruit for Maryland can outrun all of Penn State's secondary.
Yeah, that they return guys too. I'm surprised that. Well, I mean, it looks like the opening day performance of Tagovailoa was an outlier, and he can actually play some football.
Yeah, we're looking at his last 2 weeks. He's 44 for 61. That's about 74% for 676 yards. That's 11.1 per attempt with six touchdowns and one interception. And they were dialing up big plays throughout the first half. Throughout the first half yesterday, the final box score doesn't look that bad for Penn State. Penn State actually outgained Maryland 434-405, but they needed 32 more plays to do that. But the yard per play edge was all for Maryland, 6.6 to 4.7. At halftime, it was even more decisive, 8.5 to 3.8. And on the other side of the ball, Maryland, one sack coming into the game, 3 years in a row, 13th in the Big Ten in raw sack numbers, averaging only 1.5 sack per game over their last 40 contests. They had seven sacks yesterday.
I mean, has anyone wandered over to a Penn State message board to see if there's an insurrection against James Franklin?
There is. So, I mean, you know, I have all these Penn State
friends
from
Penn
doing
State
the
buddies.
Book. Yeah. So here's the two things that they're not very happy with Shirakara. The new offensive coordinator, because they go like 2 yards play. And then this game, they kind of put it all on Sean Clifford and broke him. And he was just making horrible decisions. Like a lot of the sacks were just him running into things.
He threw 57 passes.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So they're, the Penn State message boards are mostly upset that they went and got this guy and kept Ronnie and didn't get Josh Gattis.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So that's their plan. Once they're all convinced that Harbaugh is going to get fired at the end of the year, so they're going to go get Josh Gattis afterwards.
Yeah, well, this was probably the worst loss of the James Franklin era, unless you count the first time he lost to Maryland in 2014.
No, this is much deeper into.
What about losing to Michigan in 2014?
Ace, that's not helpful.
Sorry.
Ace. You guys might not have noticed that Penn State, in the second half, they missed a 49-yard field goal, and it was 4th-and-31.
That seems like a reasonable decision in that context.
No, I'm actually just wanting to point out that they got themselves in 4th-and-31. That's okay. All. That's what.
Well, people were bringing it up because James Franklin is kicking field goals down 3 scores or 4 scores again, and then like, oh, okay, it was 4th-and-31.
I'm going to give him a pass on that one.
I think the field goal decision was fine. I just like the fact that they were in 4th-and-31. They're trying to scramble and come back against Maryland, and they find themselves, you know, in 4th-and-31, and the sack that really made the field goal difficult, or he took him out of any chance of maybe going for it on 4th down, Clifford just kept backing up and backing up and backing up and backing up. And finally, a bunch of Maryland Terrapins were on him. And all of a sudden, it was 4th-and-31.
I actually caught that play. That one was pretty comical.
Yeah.
So we have a new contender for the last place game in this division. We got Michigan, yeah. Penn State, and Rutgers all vying.
Yeah. With Nebraska and Illinois and Minnesota on the other side, just fighting it out.
Just as we all predicted.
Yeah. I want to mention another thing here about this game that was just kind of interesting. So you had Maryland coming in off of a win in Big Ten play. You know, Big Ten wins are rare enough for Maryland, but they were 0-13 straight up and against the spread in games when they were coming off a Big Ten win until yesterday. They had never won a game coming off a Big Ten win, so obviously this is their first ever back-to-back wins in Big Ten play. But they had never even covered the spread the week after they had won a Big Ten game. So I thought that morsel was kind of interesting.
All right. Northwestern 21, Nebraska 13. Very unfair of the Big Ten to force Nebraska to play Northwestern. I just discovered something that is going to make all of us crawl in a hole and die. I may mention when we were doing prep that a running back for Northwestern by the name of D. Anderson popped up in the box score. And that gave me some feels about, I don't know, 20 years ago. He's Drake Anderson. He's not Damian Anderson. But what he is he's Damian Anderson's son.
No! Okay.
We are all dead.
We are.
I hope this window opens and just takes me with it.
I was in college for that game.
I was not nearly in college for that game.
I was working at a restaurant in Chicago, Illinois, trying to keep tabs of that game.
I think Damian Anderson is probably my age.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he got to work.
So he did Octonauts a long time ago.
He might be pre-Octonauts.
Yeah.
Anyway, in classic Northwestern fashion, they win this game despite being outgained by more than 100 yards. Peyton Ramsey has a pretty bad day, 10 yards completion, 5 yards in attempt-ish, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But the two-headed quarterback at Nebraska, they're alternating Martinez and McCaffrey, or did Martinez get hurt?
Martinez got benched.
Benched.
Oof. So, just to review, remember, in the opener, they played both McCaffrey and Martinez kind of at the same time against Ohio State. They didn't really do that yesterday. McCaffrey pretty much stood next to Scott Frost the whole first 3 quarters. You know, and Martinez, you know, probably had just as bad of a game passing the football as Peyton Ramsey. He was off all day, and I think the straw that broke the camel's back was a second down throw into the end zone where he threw it way too late. He threw it across the field and he threw it into triple coverage and Northwestern picked it off. And that ended a scoring drive. And we saw Luke McCaffrey come in for the game's last 3 drives for Nebraska. His first drive was a disaster because they somehow took a 12-yard sack on a flea flicker. But his second two drives got them in scoring range. But they got to about the 4-yard line, and he threw a ball into the back of his offensive lineman. So that became a tipped pass interception for Northwestern in the end zone. And the third and final drive was the last drive of the game. They got to the 14-yard line with about 4 seconds to go and threw it in the end zone incomplete.
All right. So Scott Frost will be emailing the Big Ten about how various outrages that happened this day. It takes a lot to get benched as a quarterback when you run for 102 yards on 13 carries. So I think that's... Yeah. It's not real good for him. I mean, he's a third-year player now. He should be much better than he is.
And on that interception that, you know, that looked to pull him from the game, he got him down in that position on his legs. I mean, he had a pair of chunk plays running the football. I mean, yeah, it didn't, you know, but he just kept missing guys all day. You know, earlier in the game, he had Wandell Robinson wide open for a first down. He threw it a couple yards behind him. So you lose the first down, you lose probably about 20 or 30 yards and yak on that play. He threw one screen pass so high, Robinson couldn't catch it. So that's your best skill player right there. You're taking him out of the ball game by not connecting to him. And then he threw a screen pass on the next possession, and he threw it in the dirt. He was not very accurate yesterday. But in his defense, none of his receivers are getting open. You know, I mean, they're throwing two true freshmen out there at wide receiver. Now they're guru-approved recruits, but, you know, they're still a little green. So he wasn't accurate, but it's not like he was missing wide-open receivers either.
Minnesota 41, Illinois 14. I should say the battered husk of Illinois. They're down still 14 players. They're playing their third-string quarterback, who is terrible. This was just Mo Ibrahim and Rashad Bateman dunking on the Illini. Ibrahim goes for 224 on 30 carries. Bateman goes for 154 on 10 receptions. And, you know, Illinois doesn't have a quarterback. They... missing big chunks of, I mean, this is not really a game worth putting a lot of thought into.
Yeah. I think it's worth mentioning, though, that Ibrahim has had back-to-back 200-yard, 4-touchdown games. And he has got 571 rushing yards, which is 24th nationally. The 23 players ahead of him all have 6 or more games played. And, you know, if they get all 8 games in and get a 9th game that Big Ten championship weekend – in 9 games, right now, he's on pace to have a single-season Minnesota record for rushing yards and touchdowns. So what an impressive start. And the other thing I want to mention in this game is at some point in the third quarter, I think it was Illinois' first drive of the third quarter, they faced a 3rd and goal from Minnesota's 48-yard line.
Wait, say that again?
Illinois had a 3rd and goal. Illinois had a 3rd and goal from Minnesota's 48-yard line. They threw an incomplete pass and then punted.
COVID!
Oh, right. They had a personal foul, so minus 15 yards there, and then they snapped the ball over the head of the 4th string quarterback, and he had to scramble and recover it. It was pretty exciting. When that drive finally was put in the books, it was 12 plays, 27 yards, almost 6 minutes of game clock.
Big Ten.
Beating on Illinois like that because they had such a nice season last year for Illinois, and then this year they have no shot at competing because of COVID. They would have been better off not playing these last 2 weeks.
Should not have shaved the beard.
Right.
It's true. Finally, Ohio State 49, Rutgers 27. Now, one of these touchdowns was a trickeration where they took a punt and then threw it back across the field, which was pretty awesome. And Seth mentioned that they did that earlier in the game.
Yeah, that was they did that on the opening kickoff.
So is this going to be a regular thing? It should be a regular thing. All teams should try this at least twice a game.
No, but Rutgers should just do this on every play.
Yeah. The more trick plays, the better for Rutgers. I kept wanting to watch. You're bearing the lead. They threw a screen pass to a lineman and scored a touchdown.
That also happened.
Yeah, they had a fat guy touchdown on a offensive lineman screen.
I think the throwback across the field can compete for lead.
No, that's true. Good point. That's true. I agree.
You know, I'm glad they emptied the drawer in this one.
God, Seth! The worst part about that is I was like, yeah, he's right.
It's totally a fair point.
Yeah.
Eat me into a hole.
Maybe they don't need it.
All right. Well, Seth has just ended this podcast. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I am Mace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. We want to be clear that at MGO Blog, we do not endorse rooting for COVID so that games get canceled so that we don't have to watch them.
Me sipping tea audibly.